before you get off the golf course today, you could have some moments that will change the course of your life.
Hello and welcome to the Golf Practice Podcast. My name's Andy Hayes. With me are the two Petes, Pete L., Pete Leinenweber, and Godfather of Golf, Peter Donahue. Guys, happy Wednesday.
Yeah, happy Wednesday. Happy good to be back.
Yeah, your grandmother is smiling now.
She is smiling, yeah.
Yep.
I think we've talked about this, but when she sees that the Pete is on, she's like, oh, gets really excited. And then, not that it's a disappointment to hear your voice, but.
No, since then, though, I've been specific in the.
Yeah,
in the descriptions of whether it's Pete L or Peter Donahue. Like,
I appreciate that, and she does as well.
Yeah, because we got to look out for Grandma,
right,
Grandma Leinenweber.
Right.
So,
other side, but still a grandmother. Yeah,
Grandma
Yale.
Grandma Yale.
Yeah.
All right. So today's podcast, we have actually a topic. It's a title. We've done some preparation. The title is. A definitive conclusion on the usefulness of par.
I love
that's a lot
that.
Of pressure.
Wow, this is the first time I heard that title. I love it.
So we're going. We're gonna try to make a conclusion on the usefulness of par by the end of the end of the episode.
Great.
Before we started, I saw, Zach. He's been on the pod a few times. People around the golf practice know him. He's a loyal listener. He's like, if you want someone to come on and challenge your views, let me know. And I said, no, absolutely not. That's not what I'm looking for. He said, okay, have a good unbiased discussion. I said, again, that's not what we're here for. This is we're trying to be thoughtful, but we're not trying to pretend this is unbiased in any way. So if anyone out there, is under that assumption that, we're just trying to be, fair and balanced and
disabuse yourself of that.
Exactly. So just wanted to make sure that's, we got that out of the way. But guys, I texted you and asked you to think of the story of the first time you shot under par. And that's how we're going to kind of get into this discussion. Peter, why don't you go first? You were probably the first one.
Well, when you asked me that question, Andy, I gave you a thumbs up on the text coming back. But, 74 years old, you're asking me to reach back almost 60 years and say, can you remember what happened 60 years ago? And I was telling Peter, when I first shot under par, I was a 17-year-old kid. And I was playing every day in the summertime. I was playing with Andy North and with friends of mine who were, good golfers, better golfers than I was, actually. But there, we'd go out and play 18, then we'd go out and play another 18. So it was almost like a law of averages and frequency. You were going to find a groove and eventually shoot a really good score. And as I recall it, I shot 68, and I remember it, well, do you want to ask me specific questions, or do you just want me to comment on?
No, you're doing
doing
great.
Good. Okay,
yeah,
good.
I mean,
all right.
Like,
well,
you're
I'll
pulling
keep
a lot of things out. Like, you played a lot. It was 68. How many under par was that?
3.
Okay, keep going. And then, is there anything else?
Yes, it was. I did not. I would say that I did not. I just creaked it into the barn, on fumes. I reached a point. Always having a scorekeeper yelling at me and always projecting, even from the very first or second hole about. What it would take to do whatever I needed to do. And so that voice was always in my head. And, of course, at the end of the round, I would become, really fearful of falling off and sabotaging myself or bad luck lurking in the woods just waiting to grab me because God didn't think I deserved to shoot low or whoever – whatever beings, supernatural beings there were that actually dictated these things were not on my side. Mm-hmm. And so as I remember how I played golf in those days, I would usually just kind of scrape it in, being very tense, very waiting for disaster, hoping not to three putt, hoping, you know, not to get too far ahead of myself and count any chickens. Otherwise, you know, I knew that out of bounds was always a possibility, and making 10 was a possibility. And so I managed to get it in. I think, you know, I was frayed.
Okay. Yeah. And so you were still a couple under par.
Yeah, I was a couple, so, but I was significantly under par. I mean, okay. I didn't like finish par. No, actually, I think I did. Now that I think about it, I think I did make a birdie coming in.
Okay.
But it was just like it scraped one, and it got close, and I kicked it in. And it's like, what? Yeah. How lucky can you get?
Yeah,
you know, like.
Yeah, what? Yeah,
it wasn't like glorious.
still, what course was this?
Barrington Hills.
Okay, that's great. Did you tell anyone afterwards?
Oh yeah, are you kidding? I mean, that's why you shot. Well,
yeah,
right?
You took an ad out in the newspaper.
Who are you telling? Like, what's the?
Oh, I was telling my dad. I was telling my friends. Yeah. I was telling the pro Lee Milligan. I was telling anybody that would hear my story. Are you kidding? I mean, all us golfers. That's we want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah. All right. So let's go. Whoever's happened like next in time. Mine would have been 2012, 13-ish. Would you beat me?
Mine would have been 2012.
Okay, you probably beat me. You can go first.
So I was I'll start here. Pete, you said you're 74 and you had a tough time remembering. I'm 27 and I had a tough time remembering when it was, but I don't know if this was officially the first time, but it stands out the most.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good memory in my brain. But I think I was a sophomore at Loyola. I was kind of a nobody on the team. I mean, Loyola had some good teams back then. They still do. But there's a lot of good players. And we did a practice at Wilmette. That was our home course. And we decided, our coach decided, we were going to play from the white tees, which is the front tees there. And I don't think I'd ever done that, at least since I was a little kid. And part of the reason was just kind of get comfortable being really, really low, right? Get comfortable being under par. And I had a putt for 29. I shot 30 on the front nine there. And I remember, I mean, when you're playing from those tees, there's going to be a lot of drivable par fours, but you still have to get the ball in the hole. I made 5 birdies and 4 pars. And on the ninth hole there, I hit a drive just short of the green, chipped to like maybe 12 feet. And I knew what I was putting for. I missed it, but I knew that like I had never been even close to that in my life. And I wanted to go play the back nine after that. We didn't. I think it was, you know, October in Chicago, so it gets dark at like 5:30. But that's the round that stands out the most because that kind of kickstarted the rest of my high school golf career, because then I was like, people were like, who is this guy? And I think I went on a pretty good run after that, but I had never experienced anything even remotely close to that up to that point. Oh. Yeah.
Did you tell anybody?
Oh yeah, for sure. I told my family's, as I've probably talked about on the podcast, my immediate family, nobody's a golfer. My parents don't golf, siblings didn't golf. So whenever I had something exciting about my golf life to share, I would tell it to them, but you could tell they just didn't really understand.
Sure.
They couldn't really conceptualize what it meant. Yeah. But yeah, told my friends, told my teachers, told everybody.
Told your teachers?
Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah. Because like in class, when you're golf, the golf team's not very big.
Yeah.
And Loyola is a big school. So if like, you know, they knew me as the golfer. Mm-hmm. So the teachers that golfed, I would tell them. Yeah.
Shot under par.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. It's cool.
All right, Pete, sit down. open your book.
Okay. That's what they said. Yeah. No, I mean, it was like, it was a cool time. It was a cool round. Yeah. And like, that was the course that, again, similar to you, Pete, I was playing golf every day. That's all I did. So it was bound to happen. Yeah. Like you said, law of averages.
And mine was, it would have been after college, but I was playing Highland Park Country Club and working there. So working and playing a lot, like multiple times a week. And this was a time where we'd like start at like 5 o'clock and be able to play in a cart, and either by myself or with my brother, you could play, you know, 18 holes in like 2.5 hours. This was like a different time in my life than now, where it's like, however fast you can play is almost just better, right? So we wouldn't even, if there was a day where it would be full, like we wouldn't even play, right? Because we didn't want to take that long.
Sure.
But it was, I think I was with Jenny, my wife. She wasn't playing. She was just like hanging out in the cart. And it's just like playing, going fast. And then I played the back nine first, and then I played the front nine second. And I was like even par and shot, which has happened like plenty of times. And then it's just like, okay, I'll make a bogey, like whatever. And so I wasn't really wasn't nervous or thinking about anything. But then I went like, I like birdied hole 7, then I birdied hole 8, and then I birdied hole 9. And that was, and so I shot like 3 under. But that was, it was like all right at the end. There wasn't any like pressure really of like, oh man, I got to hold on to this. It just like kind of, it felt like something that happened.
It was a late charge.
Yeah. But it was, I hit one memorable shot. That 7 was a par 3. That had to be, that was birdie. I don't remember anything about it. 8, short par 4, birdie. 9, long par 5, 3-shot hole, water in front of the green. Hit a great drive, hit a great second shot into a divot.
Mm.
And this was at the point of my, most times I would just move it out of the divot. I'm not playing, it's not a tournament, right? Like, but I did. I hit it out of the divot over the water, made the birdie.
Wow.
So nice. That was a, yeah. But again, it was great. It was, so that was, I guess, different than maybe other times where I shot under par. Like more recently, would get more under earlier and be able to like hold on. I think that's a harder thing to do. It was, but really, like the first couple times I shot under par were just like that, of like a string of birdies at the end, not enough time to mess anything up. You know, it'd be like if it was if you shoot even on the front and then birdie 10, 11, 12, be like, no chance, you're not holding on to that one. Right. That's too long. But if it's at the end, it's at the end of your day. You
can, and you're feeling your swing, and now you're just seeing it and reacting.
Yeah.
You know, you're not scaring yourself.
Yeah.
You're not getting in the gears.
And you almost weren't even trying, you know, weren't even trying to do it. You weren't having to try. It's also like if you're even, you're like, oh, I want to try to make a birdie here.
Right.
That doesn't work either. So
it's
just something that seemed to happen.
Yeah, that's cool.
That is, that's very cool.
Yeah, that's really true. That's interesting to you know, analyze the flow of those things, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, I was playing in a U.S. Open qualifying at Twin Orchard years ago, 36 holes, and I got hot in the middle of my second 18, and I rang off 5 birdies in a row. Now all of a sudden I'm under par for the day. And we get to the 18th hole, and the old Chicago District, you know, rules official comes out and says, you know, because we were at the end of the field, anybody in here doing any good, you know? And of course, I didn't say anything, but they all pointed at me. and so I'm standing up over my ball, and I'm addressing it, waggling. I'm about to go into my swing. He says, remember, there's out of bounds on the left.
Oh, no.
So I hit it to the right.
And you can't
made,
do
and
that.
Made, what and kind made of? A six. Oh. I made a double bogey on the last hole to miss by.
Wow.
What kind of common is that? That is terrible.
That's an old
have some
guy
awareness, man.
Be out there. But anyway, I mean, that would have, whether he'd said it, I get to blame it on him.
Sure.
You know, I probably could have done my own sabotaging, which I clearly did.
Yeah. So up until this year, up until like this week, I thought like par was just a good, like that was a, good, a great goal to have, be breaking par, right? Mm-hmm. If you do it, it means something to you, mean, you know, means something to other people. I think you're a, you know, a really great,
a stick,
great player, right? And there once, and that's, it's almost like that's the last frontier in golf, in getting good at golf, right? Like it doesn't, I don't know what, I haven't shot as low as you have, Pete, but I've shot, well, so what, that's another great question. Lowest round ever. Who wants to go? You go first. Lowest to par.
68. Ever? 72.
That's four under.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
It was two summers ago, nine under at Sunset. Nine birdies, nine pars.
Wow.
Awesome. Mine was six under at Sand Valley. Six clubs.
Nice.
That was a that was a day of just like made like four like 40-foot putts. Mm-hmm. You know the yeah. where it's yeah. like
something's
yeah, I'm playing
something's going
it's
on.
Like a magical day, but it's like this is it was great. It yeah. was so much fun, but yeah. it still is like it was at the Mammoth Dunes course, but it's like yeah, a bunch of par fives, yeah. a bunch of short par fours. Every putt went in.
But that's how you get to that point.
No,
that's how you get
sure.
to that low.
Yeah,
is like
yeah,
things
yeah.
just have to go right.
It's still, yeah. oh, it's gosh, great. Yes. Oh, yeah. Even though that's gettable, it's yeah. like
you gotta,
also not gettable,
yeah.
you
yeah.
know? Like
sure, yeah. And that was another day I was with, it was with like family, like with Jenny, with my brother and my brother's wife. And so that was like a good, for me, that's a really comfortable group to mm-hmm. be at because there's not, no one's, I know no one's going to make anyone mad. We're all just like happy to be there. No one's mm-hmm. going to get mad at a bad shot. You know, if I'm not with like, you know, the right, you know, that, so that helped as well.
Yeah.
After that, I didn't go like, oh, I'll, now I shot six under. My previous best was four under. Like I've made it.
Yeah.
I don't know. What did you think?
No, I mean it felt yeah. it was fun.
Like
it was totally
yeah, yeah.
it was a great day and it's fun yeah. to play that well, but it doesn't.
But like compared to shooting under your first time, would you agree?
Yeah, it's yeah, not. Yeah. yeah. I would agree. It's not life-changing.
Yeah, right.
No, it isn't that, is it? It's but you know, as I played as I got older, the yeah. experience was better. Hmm. I mean, you know, yeah. It was more successful management, you know, of emotions and,
sure.
you know, and stuff like that. So it was more satisfying than just feeling like you ran into something. That's what
yeah.
that's the way
yeah.
I felt the first time.
Yeah,
it's
same
like,
with yeah. yeah.
And, you know, I had a student one time that said, shot 69, a girl in a tournament, and she never talked about it. And I finally asked her one day, how come you don't talk about that round? That's a terrific, that's the lowest round you ever shot. She said, well, nothing bad really happened to me.
Sure.
So that's all yeah. she had to say about it.
Yeah.
Everything went well, and we added them up, and
yeah.
so it wasn't so spectacular, you know? And,
yeah.
It's an interesting...
Yeah. So I, again, up until this week, was convinced that par, you know, I would still say there's other reasons to play golf than the score, but as far as, like, if you were going to measure yourself, par would be a good thing. A match play situation, sometimes you have good stories from it, but sometimes, you know, it's like we won the match and you can't. How does that stack up versus the other match that you had, right? Whereas if you have scoring, you in theory could be, mm-hmm. well, I had 67 this day and I had 70 that day. And so that day obviously was a better day for me, right? The
mm-hmm.
lower score.
I have a question.
Yes.
For both of you. So if you shoot 71 on a par 70 versus a 72 on a par 72, which do you think is, like, if you're saying, oh, that this is my low round ever, do you say the 71 or do you say the even par 72?
Oh. No, the under par, the whichever one's in relation to
in
par.
Relation, so you say in relation to par, not the total
yeah,
score.
That's
what about
I
you,
would
Pete?
Think.
What about you?
No, par. I mean, it's in relation to par.
Yeah,
I think I'm the score.
Wow.
I think if you shot 71, that's your lowest score ever.
Okay.
I don't know. I that's just, I guess, how I think
yeah,
about
I,
it.
I mean, well, yeah. I shot 65 at Canal a handful of times.
Now, that's a little different, but I think as long as it's a full course, okay, like a, you know, par 70 or par 71 or 2 or 3 even, like, your lowest score is your lowest score.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
Because I mean, you could... There's some courses that are par 70 that you know, have long par 4s that could be just as well could be a par 5 on the scorecard, too.
Ooh, now we've got a little something going on.
Like, if you shoot
different,
if you shoot
the number.
If you shoot 59 on a par 70, is it worse than shooting 59 on a par 70, 72? You still shot 59. I don't know.
Well, I don't want to get to that. Let me experience both.
Yeah. Well, then just move it to 69 on a par 70 versus, you know, 69 on a par 72.
Yeah. No, to me, it's just about how many under
relation
you
to par.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Has that changed this week now that your thought on par has changed?
Well, kind of. We're getting to my point here. So I have my kind of my evidence. Like I've had some experiences this year already that have shaped my my view on this. So I'm going to share a story of three golf experiences, some of which you guys were a part of, and we're going to go from there. Use that as our evidence that we have to, you know, it demands a verdict. Okay. So at the end of last year, we're going way back to September of last year. With Hickory Clubs, I shot 2 under at Bryn Mawr Country Club. That was my goal of the year, shoot under par. Finally did it. It was a perfect day. It was like an afternoon round on a Monday. It was Henry Way and myself with the course to ourselves. Henry was playing Hickory for the first time, so there's like really good energy.
Mm-hmm.
Course in great condition. It's also a course that I've shot under par at like multiple times. There's 5 par 5s and a couple short par 4s, but I, for whatever reason, I just make every putt at that course. I don't have any explanation as to why. But so I did. 2 under. It's great. Exciting. Met my goal. The next round was at Sweetens Cove with Peter, Henry, a couple other people. And we talked about this on the last episode of our podcast, but the course was really challenging, and the conditions were really, the way the ground was pretty challenging. The greens were like super duper fast and enough, like if someone could shoot under par there on 9 holes, like I can't even like picture how that would have happened. I'm sure it could, but on the days we were there, I don't see how that was even possible. But I played really good. Didn't have many. Had a few bad shots, you know. But like, but never had a 9 holes. I don't think I had a 9 holes that would have been under like 40 for the 9 holes. But played good. And then we have last week when we played Shepherd's Crook Friday. It was the windiest time that I've ever felt, enough that you could like feel yourself like being pushed off balance by the wind as you were swinging, which was a challenging thing to do. But I had, my score was 7 over, which I think it's par 71. So I think that'd be 78. I had a couple like two, if we're like probably had 2 3.5 foot putts that I just picked, you know, I gave myself. So this wasn't like that was the type of round we were playing. But so if someone's really, you know, examining the round and wants to say, like, again, I don't care what they want to say. But that was probably the best I've ever hit the ball. Like some of the shots I hit, like hole 4, that like 220 yard par 3, like I hit this, it's mid iron. I hit it onto the green, made par. I never make par on that.
It's a brutal hole.
It's really hard. And then 7, par 4 is like dead into the wind. I like popped my drive up and had like 150 and then hit this like half swing 5 iron, like low, that just like went onto the green. And then, so that was like a shot I've like, one of the, probably the best shots I've ever hit in my life.
Yeah.
Maybe both of those best shots I've ever hit. Best overall like string of holes that I've had, hitting the last hole. It was like dead into the wind. This was, Peter, you were gone by this point. And I hit maybe my like purest shot of the day and it somehow went like a foot long into a spot that was impossibly up and down. So I was bogey, but it was like, I hit three incredible shots into that hole, but you know, made bogey, finished the day with 78. And so it's kind of like that day I hit the ball way better. My skill was way higher than when I shot under par at Bryn Mawr. But if anyone were to ask me about the day, I'd say, well, that was a 78 and that was a, you know, two under. I don't know what the par is at Bryn Mawr, but you see what I'm saying.
Yeah.
One sure. was seven over par. One was two under par. But those numbers don't even come close to painting the picture of how I played that day.
Right.
So exactly. Is it even worth having those numbers in the first place?
I mean, I was there for that round. I saw those shots you're describing. I also would say that I hit the ball as good as I've hit in a long time, other than really one swing on that same fourth hole where I basically hosled it and got really lucky that it was in play. But you had to be super grounded. I mean, especially putting, I felt like I was going to be blown over. Yeah. I mean, you could sure. feel your back. Like if the wind was at your back, you could feel yourself falling forward. Yeah. That's hard. That's really hard to play in. But yeah, I think that round compared to a round I played a few weeks ago in Mexico where I shot two under, had like five birdies and an eagle. This round at Shepherd's, I shot 72, had three birdies and then a few bogeys, but I played significantly better then, mm-hmm. and it was not a very different score, but it was a much different score.
Sure.
So, to answer your question, no, it does not even begin to tell the full story of the round, the score or your relative to par.
Sure.
There's so many more bits of information you need to fully contextualize a round than just what you shot.
I think contextualizing the round is, that's exactly it. You know, how much skill is called for or was expressed in the round of golf is like, it's implied, you know, by the score maybe, but mm-hmm. not without context.
No.
Like you're saying, you know, and you hear tour pros, you know, say the same things.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about rounds where the guy, you know, wasn't, you know, got a bad draw or wasn't really feeling it, and somehow he managed to skillfully, control himself and make the most out of what he had, and he played a round that he calls great, you know, and maybe it's just, you know, two over par. Which for them we know is not like nobody's bragging about shooting 74.
No.
Unless they're in the initiated group. Because now when they're talking about it in the locker room, everybody knows what the conditions were. They all have the context.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there can be, you know, some sort of agreement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but generally speaking, yes, it's just that flashy number that we're flashing out at each other.
Yeah, do you think, I'm just thinking about how the golf score like compares to a score in other sports. Like let's say track and field. If you're running a lap, the only thing that matters is just like the time that mm-hmm. you get. There's not really, I could be wrong, but I don't think there's like, I really was going my fastest, but I was slower that day. You know what I
mean?
So I'm still holding my head up high. I feel like it's like really like all about the number. If you're playing team sports where you're like your goal is you got to beat the other team, and it's like, well, either you made the shots that day or you didn't, that has a more useful, right? It's like pretty, a more useful measure of skill, whereas golf, we almost like assume it's the same. It's like, well, that's the way golf scores.
Yeah. 6,600 yards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
7,600 yards, whatever. Yeah. It's all the same, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's all you need to know is how long was the course, what was the par.
Yeah, what tees did you play from?
Yeah.
yeah, what was the par, how many under you or how many over you were, and that's then that kind of, you said, yeah, it implies this some level of skill, but I think the way everyone uses it and everyone talks about the number implies that the number implies a whole lot more than it actually does.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, it does. You know, it's not meaningless, but to those of us that, you know, have played in the game a long time and had different kinds of golf experiences, it is just what you say. It's not.
But my three examples, don't they kind of say that it is meaningless, or the meaning is like very small in these examples?
Yeah. Oh, clearly.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Clearly. Yes.
It's meaningless without context.
Yeah.
Sure.
Like if you have the context of a tournament, like if we had a tournament at Shepherd's Crook on Friday, you'd be able to see where that 78 would stack up against everybody else.
Sure.
But just hearing 78 at Shepherd's Crook, I need to know what time of year it is, what was the weather, what was the wind, what was...
Yeah, but even with that story, couldn't you imagine me talking to someone else about my under par round at Bryn Mawr and my 78 at Shepherd's Crook? And even though I'm saying Shepherd's Crook, I hit it so good. I've never hit better shots in my life. And Bryn Mawr, you know, it was just an easy course and I putted really good. They still think that under par round was better.
For sure.
Yes. Oh yeah.
And definitely. So then if they do, then it's the number is lying. It's creating a false narrative for people. I need to find a way to talk about the golf that doesn't include it because it's too distracting.
Well, yeah, yes. Well, can I read this?
You got you sure?
Yeah.
This is what do you got?
This is Dan Jenkins, who was a writer for Sports Illustrated for many years and wrote best-selling books about football, pro football, and pro golf, and he's writing a book. This is a series that Dogged Victims of Inexorable Fate is actually a quote from Bobby Jones Jones was observing that's what all of us golfers are. And it's a series of essays about the early tour. But in this, he's writing an essay or an article about entitled "The Game of Golf," spelled with an G O L F E. And it was about not only his first experience in Scotland. Yes, it was his first experience in Scotland. And so, he was marveling at how different it was, just the turf and the grass and how they viewed the game. And so he was talking in this story about his caddy and how people kept score. So I will read it. One finds in Scotland, however, that if the botany doesn't confuse you, the scorekeeping will. I drove well at the ninth, which means safely on to the close-cropped fescue grass, which comprises all Scottish fairways. I reached the small green with one of my rare unshanked four irons, and I stole a putt of about 20 feet for a three. Then the trouble began. I said, "Is this a par four hole?" Caddy, "No, sir. It plays to a bogey five." I said, "Then I made an eagle." He said, "It cannot be an eagle, sir." "Well, what's par for the course?" He said, "Bogey today is about 76. "But level fours is 72, I said. "Shouldn't that be what I would call par?" The caddy thought for a minute and said, "I reckon par to be about 74 today." "What was it yesterday, for instance?" I asked. oh, and that wind yesterday, par must have been 77 or so. I said, well, I think I just made an eagle. You did not make an eagle, sir. A birdie? Not exactly a birdie with the help and wind, sir. A par? Oh, much better than a par it was. So what in the goddamn hell was it? It was a very good score, sir. Your first of the round.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, it's a, he's a good writer.
Oh, can you give us a little background on the bogey? You know, that's not something we really talk about here.
Well, bogey, you know, in an order to when golf was first being played, you know, in the British Isles, I think it was just purely a match play experience, and there really wasn't a standard. Mm. And so when they finally came up with a standard, it was for a gentleman golfer. And that gentleman golfer they referred to as Colonel Bogey. And that would, so the standard was, what would a gentleman golfer shoot?
Just like an average, like a,
yeah,
maybe
an average
above
Joe,
average,
Bo,
maybe,
yeah, 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 maybe, you know, somebody that hits it pretty good,
yeah.
And well, pretty good, because yeah, you know, as they're saying, and as I think you and I have exchanged at Prestwick, and the scorecard that I got when I played Prestwick back in the mid '80s, the par was 68 and the bogey was 76. And so on a hole of like 320 yards, the par might be the same as the bogey. Okay. You know, both yeah, four.
Sure.
But if you were playing the 10th hole 429 yards into the wind, the bogey was a five and the par remained at a four. But, you know, if you made the bogey on the hole, you know, you felt, you felt really good about it,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And so in any event, it really was, as has, you know, been described by Jim Hartzell, you know, in his recounting his travel log of courses throughout Scotland. You know, if the conditions, if the terrain was right and the wind was right, you could drive the green, right?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so on the par four, mm-hmm. you know, roll it all the way down there and on. And so as Jenkins is pointing out, well, the caddy or somebody in the know would say, let's take the conditions into effect, mm-hmm. sir. Let's take the context into effect, into consideration, you know, when we're talking about how great your two was.
Yeah.
You know, you rolled it on a punch bowl hole. You rolled it down a hill with the wind at your back. The green fed it to 2 feet, and you made a two. So I hope you feel good about that. You'll be able to, you know, maybe somebody will buy you a pint once we get in. But we all know that you missed it. You hit it right of your target. It fed down the hill.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what I was going to ask.
Well,
So I am, I guess I'm just like thinking through like my definitive conclusion of the usefulness of par is that it's not as useful as I once thought. And I just thought of the idea that, is your score, does your score describe a round of golf in the same way that, like, if you were to describe a painting by just saying, like, what color it was, that
yeah,
would describe the, you know, the artwork at the museum. It's like, well, it was green and blue and yellow. It doesn't quite, you know, doesn't quite measure what the entirety of the thing.
Truthfully.
But if we were to assume that, oh, that's all that mattered is like what colors were used and how much of what colors, then you would you know, maybe be thinking that was more important than it otherwise would. So do you have any other ideas of like how, you know, how our world, because the world needs, like, we're doing a service for the world.
Yeah.
We can't just say, like, don't talk about PAR anymore without offering any, you know, any other ways to talk about skill or the round or anything else like that. Do you guys have any ideas?
Well, I do think poetry or verse, you know, would be appropriate.
Okay. So, like, we're writing a poem after the...
Yeah, after the round, about the journey, your emotional journey, and, you know, the dragons that you slayed at the Rundabin hole, or, you know...
Yeah.
You know.
Sure. I mean, I like it. I've never really... I just found out recently that poetry doesn't have to rhyme, so I maybe am not the one to do that. So.
Well, you can, you know, you can just call it verse.
Oh, verse, yeah.
You know, that would be, you know. But I think that's it. I think that, you know, if we write a song about it, or we do, let's say, if we did a painting.
I love the idea. I love this type of thinking, but I'm just imagining we're not gonna, you know, finish our round at Shepherd's Crook and go into the clubhouse and like
paint.
do a painting to represent the joy that it all brought.
Yeah,
you.
I mean, it's a great idea, but I just don't quite see us getting to that.
What if you rated each individual shot and then gave an average?
Okay,
at the
you
end?
Do that though, right?
I do that.
Or you used to do that?
I still do that. Not okay. Every time, but I'll do it. If I have, you know, a few minutes after the round, but I it's back to what we talked about earlier of, like, you know, when you shoot under par, like, does it, you know, does that feeling last? I usually sleep well for the next few nights because that's how I fall asleep, is I'll go back through the shots in my brain.
Damn right.
Wow.
And it's usually more fun going through the shots when you played well than it is when you played poorly, because then you're staying up.
And if you wake up as many times at night as I do to take a leak, then you got a lot to, you know, relive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can always go back through the archives and go back through old rounds, Pete.
I'm starting to do that now.
Yeah.
But definitely, I replayed those 9 holes at Shepherd's Crook the other day.
Yeah.
You're damn right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And or maybe it's just like we can go the other way and just like start like poking holes in our stories or other people's stories too, like, oh, like, hey, I shot under par. Your response would be like, oh, well, like at a country club with perfect greens.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Congrats. Like,
you'd every be perfect putt, for that. Yeah. Yeah. You'd be our designated balloon putter.
Oh, every putt held its line. Okay.
Yeah.
Good How job. Hard is that?
Nice.
Good job. In the summer, the ball rolls out. You know, 300-yard drive. That's 260 in the, you know, in the spring. That's wet.
That's exactly. Yeah. When did you shoot that round, hot shot?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. What was the
that
weather?
Was your fifth round of the week? Like, oh, it was your home course. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, truthfully, yes. If you want to rain on everybody's parade, that would be
But it's part of it's part of the process. It's not, we're not raining on people's parade, you know, just to rain on it. It's like the light comes at the end of the tunnel. We have to kind of tear apart the current way, you know, the current structures that be.
Definitely.
So that something new can be born out of that. And so
then how would we, you know, we're trying to essentially redefine how to keep score right now.
To a certain extent. That's actually a great question. What are we trying to do? Is it how to keep score? What are we measuring? What do we need to measure?
The quality of the round, I think.
The quality of your skill?
The quality of your skill relative to the course and the day.
Okay. Yeah.
But like people that come in here and most golfers in the world, they measure themselves by their score, right? We've talked about that ad nauseum. But somebody that's trying to break 90, like, are we going to poke holes when they shoot 89? Like, oh, I mean, it was par 70. Like,
it's
nice weather. Like, you got some good bounces. Maybe had a breakfast ball in the first. Like, what are we, you know?
Did you hit 2 off 1? That's another great question. Thank you for that one,
yeah.
Pete. No, I guess I'm more thinking about like the even par type of. Well, but even then, oh, you shot under 90. Maybe you don't have to. Maybe that's not the person you're. You know, those are people you're probably trying to build up. Oh, yeah. You've only been playing for 2 years. Like, oh, that's incredible. Like,
yeah,
that's actually incredible. Like, oh, you were playing with golfers who were better than you. Like, that's actually really a hard thing to mm-hmm. do. Like, that's actually more impressive than your buddy who's been playing for 20 years who just shot, you know, 82. Like,
yeah,
it's actually not that good at all if you think about it. So, yeah, maybe it's just bringing in the overall the entire story to the description of the day.
Yes, I think so. I think it has. I like the idea that Peter has of, you know, rating each of the shots and being able. I like that. I rate them on a scale of 1 to 5,
yeah.
1 being fabulous. And
I do it the opposite. 5 yeah. is a bit. Yeah, so it doesn't.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. You know
what they are. They're gems. You know, yeah. and you know that if you got, you know, you got the highest number of good scores on shots that you've ever gotten, then that's a hell of a round, right?
Yeah.
If you say, you know, I got, and I like it from the standpoint of that, you know, the round can be expressed as a series of numbers, you know, if you wanted to say that. You want to lead with your best. You know, I got 37 ones, I got 17 twos, mm-hmm. I got, you know, blah, 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 you know, but they were well-executed shots. Well-executed shots against what? You know, against resistance? Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that would come in. You would say it would be a measure against the resistance yeah. that you faced, I think, you know, to some extent.
But then it still comes down to a number at the end of the day. But maybe numbers is not the useful way to do it at all.
You could do it with colors.
That's what I'm – the painting is growing on me. I'm not sure I'm going to get all the way to saying, like, we should make a painting after the round. You know, Pete's a better drawer than me. His is just going to look better. Right, I don't have any sense of that. But thinking about if you almost – maybe it's just all it needs to be is just an analogy or a metaphor. And then you think about, like, the round that we played on Friday. And if each one of our rounds were kind of a painting and we have the four – you know, Nathan was with us too. We have, you know, Pete's round and Andy's round and Peter's round and Nathan's round. And they're, you know, you almost imagine them as a picture. And, oh, maybe someone, like, Pete's drives were, like, awesome. Maybe someone likes that painting better. Maybe mm-hmm. They liked some of the iron shots I hit, and they thought that was better. They liked, Peter, that you had two bags on your golf cart.
I forgot about
righty
that.
Righty and lefty clubs. And they, you know, they thought that was better. Or they thought, like, Nathan, like, didn't hit it that great at the beginning, but like he topped his first two balls, like the worst shots you could possibly hit in that mm-hmm. wind. But by the end, he was hitting it pretty good. Like maybe they like that painting better, but then like that's all that we really need to make it. And we don't need to make it more, you know, more than that. We don't need to say like which painting would sell for more, you know, or is more valuable.
No,
it's just like here they are and. You know, what do you, you know, are you interested in them and
yeah.
what can you pull out of it?
Yeah. Oh, I can hear the whole round yeah. kind of being portrayed as some sort of symphony, can't you? Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. starts sure. off kind of, for Nathan, kind of dark. Oh, mm-hmm. yeah. And in the end, it's like.
So maybe we yeah. write a song
songs?
After the round.
Yeah, songs, yeah. pictures.
Symphony, yeah.
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 And it's the kind of thing, like, you could, it, like, If you wanted to go to the, you know, the Chicago, the Art Institute and look up the value, the monetary value of each painting as you were going through, you could do that on your phone, you know, and then you could find the most valuable one. And so in the same way, maybe there's like the score, you know, in our museum, you could find it out. You'd have to look it up or you'd have to like scan the,
yeah.
the code. So we've got our pictures, and you could find the score. But if that's how you were going to experience the stories of these days, your experience is not going to be as valuable, because like our brains will just default to whatever score was better, that's the one that you think was better, as opposed to just like seeing what you connect with and what interests you.
Yeah. I think that, I don't think, that's so interesting. Would you judge a painting by its price?
No.
No.
But I could see myself getting caught up. Not, I don't think I would now, but I think it's like, which one, you know?
Yeah.
You know, why was that
Lisa's
better?
Mona Lisa's not as good as the...
Sure, whatever. Yeah.
Come on.
It's a little overrated.
Yeah, I mean, I don't go to museums. Overrated. Yeah, I don't quite go to the museums as much. But I don't think you would, but I'm saying in the same way, could we get to that? But so in the same way, like, would you judge a painting by its price? Like, would you judge a round of golf by its score? Well, our answer is absolutely, we would. But under our new vision for the world, could we get to a place where it's like, you would judge that by the score? What?
Yeah.
Why would you?
Yeah, good Lord. Yeah. No.
Who do you think you are?
I think that's going to be a hard thing to sell to the golf community.
I think we're getting there. It's pretty compelling.
No, I think it's great, has something to do with vibrations.
Yeah.
You
know, I mean, I think that the music, is something that is appealing to me right now, because when you have... you know, a vibration that's very, very lovely, yeah, very stirring, very, you know, I think that you certainly were there, and you certainly were there during that round, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there was, you know, sort of just an ambling to the next tee, and then there was a rising to the shot, and, you know, a glorying in the moment of observance and execution and celebration by your mates, you know, like, Andy, what the? Or you, like, on 9, just, like, shattering that drive into the wind. I thought, that is so free and powerful and, like, violent, and at least the shaft of the club was, that I just wanted to break into song.
Well, that whole, I mean... without wind is a pretty standard par 5, but with the wind that particular day, it was like a 700-yard hole.
Oh, God.
I mean, I went driver, and I had 100 yards in, and I hit two good ones, too. Like,
that's incredible. Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, yeah, well, that's what I mean. But
I keep coming back to context, because you brought up the museums. I was at the Louvre last summer with my wife, and, like, the way that have you ever been there?
No.
Have you been there, Pete?
No.
It is a massive compound. I mean, it was a castle for centuries. It's the biggest building I've ever seen. Not tallest, but like the largest building. You could be in there for days and still not see it all. But we were in there for a couple hours, and like the way it's set up is like it goes through like periods of time, and then the artwork is all very similar based on the time period. And like, I'm not super into looking at a painting or a sculpture, but like when you can compare it to other ones, it's like, oh, that's cool to see like when this was created, who created it, and like why it's the way that it is. Mm-hmm. Because it's not just like the perfect stroke. It's more just the emotions of the artist at the particular time that it was made. But like, you need the context of everything else going on at that time to really appreciate it. Not the price.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe some people, but... I think it's the same with you need the context of the weather on Friday to know why that 78 was such a good number or such a good score.
I think we're at the end of in the middle somewhere of a period in history where the monetizing numerically scoring something is kind of reaching its peak.
Yeah.
It didn't exist originally in golf. I mean, all of the golf architects from the classic era make mention of it, that the pencil and scorecard golfers that were starting to take over the golf culture, when these guys wrote their books, McKenzie and those and Ross and those guys, and we're now trying we're in the beginning of the Renaissance here, Andy. Where I feel like we're Florentines, you know, and
I feel like
So do
I
we just get rid of score in every other sport too? Like, how do
I feel like I already made that point of like the score in other sports more accurately describes the skill.
Yeah.
Compared to golf, you know, relative to
golf. Yeah, bowling is very simple.
Yeah. Sure. Bowling is simple, but like the, and maybe there's sometimes there's context to the football, you know, occasionally there's like the guy is like running for a touchdown and he fumbles it like out of the back of the end zone. You know what I mean? And then the other team gets it. It's like, well, that's a crazy penalty. And they lost because of that. It's like, okay.
Yeah, you can't.
You still played better than the team, and you got the most unlucky break ever. But most of the time, it's like, well, you know, Mahomes was just better than the other guy, and they won.
There are times where you can't, like, look at the box score and learn what happened in the game. You need to have actually seen it. But you're right. For the majority.
It's like, this this tells which team did better. It's not, there's not tons of times where it's like, well, that team, even though they lost by, you know, in basketball, they lost by 20 tonight, but they actually played way better than the night where they won by 15.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, the night they play better, they win, and the night they play worse, they lose. There isn't this kind of like, well, I played better at this course on this day, and I played worse here, but my score was different. And so, like, just saying the score doesn't actually say which one was better.
Right.
Or which one wasn't. So, I think we need like, Pete, we need to commission you to do like a series of artwork for us. Wow. And I think it's cartoon. It starts as cartoon strips. It's like cartoon. Yeah. So one, it's
ooh,
like,
I like that. Yeah. Cartoon strips.
So cartoons, but this is going to start to make our point. Yeah. This isn't, you don't need to do this of the round. And it's like the first one is they're at the Louvre and it's like two people and they're looking at these like paintings, you know, maybe Mona Lisa, and there's one next to it. And the guy like looks at the other guy and he's like, which one, you know, do you know which one cost more?
Yeah.
Right, so it's like that's the wrong question to be asked, and then then we have our, you know, the golf, you know, it's a parallel universe. There's paintings, but it's clearly like they're of golf, of a golf experience, and the two same guys. And he's like, which one shot lower? You know, so it's our implication that like it's asking about the score is the same as asking the value of the painting, which you absolutely can do, and it does measure it, and it says something about it, but maybe it says just about as much about the painting as the cost of the painting or the colors used on the painting tell about, you know, what the painting actually is.
I think we're going to get you also a lyre, some sort of musical instrument.
And for the Renaissance,
start writing ballads.
You know, I think you're the one with the songs, Pete. I think you could. I could hear you come into the cube and all the lights are off. And we just hear your voice from up top booming down about, you know, about
the bogeys in the pot.
Yeah.
And the laser shots into the fan. No, I'm up for that. I definitely, I'll do what I find a lyre somewhere.
That's great. All right. Well, I mean, this is actually a much better conclusion than I actually expected to get to. We actually came up with something. We can let it sink in and see if we're going to commit to it, you know, for the rest of our lives. But I think it could do good for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Especially kids, where like the only thing. Literally, the only thing that matters is like their score, and they don't, because they think it's related to college and things.
And
like
that's
that,
that's which, the older generation's fault, because we've
it's our fault
at some point preached that.
Scores
how you I mean that they're measured in every aspect of their lives, standardized testing, you know, gym class, like all of it.
So
could
golf.
Why wouldn't you also have a number for your golf skill?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, it can be like it'll be like your credit rating. You know.
Yeah.
You're a 695.
He's a 480.
Wow. Is that good, by the way? What's a good credit rate?
I think 720 is like good.
Ooh, all right. Yeah. Ooh,
I'm sure if you're in the high 600s, you're fine, but.
Yeah, you're just fine.
You're not going to get a great rate on your mortgage.
Oh, my gosh. What kind of a golf? Well, I'm a 695. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well.
Yeah, it is an interesting question to ask. Like, what if you thought about that day more like a painting than a, you know, a math test? Mm-hmm. How would you describe it?
It's like partial credit. Yeah. Sometimes teachers will give partial credit for a, you know, in a math class or a science class for your work. They can see you're going down the right route. You didn't get the correct answer. I mean, like, your round wasn't the lowest score you've ever shot, but, like, you got a lot of partial credit for
I want the partial credit. That's what I'm saying, though. I want, if we had a different way to talk about that, that would have been my best paint. That would have been the best painting that is the most interesting and, moves people in the most way. Yeah. But we don't have that way to talk about it. So there's not a way to communicate the quality of that day.
I think it's kind of probably whale sound.
You know? I thought we were off base with the painting, but whale I don't want to give ourselves more time.
I do think there's a certain vibration element to this thing. You know, it's like kind of reminds me of the harmony of the music of the spheres. Who was that Greek scientist philosopher that came up with that? But at any rate, I think I just lost my train. I was thinking of something brilliant just a second ago. Just disappeared.
We'll trust you on that one. Take your word for it.
Yeah, well, let's maybe let this whale sound sink in, and then we'll come back.
All right.
I might be more confused now than I was an hour ago, but there's stuff to think about.
Thank you, guys. Yeah. I appreciate it. I'm not confused at all. So we can have a follow-up question
this.
Answer.
Yeah.
If you have questions, if you have thoughts, if anyone's still listening, you can email your thoughts in.
Yeah.
Andy@thegolfpractice.com would love to hear from you. I will respond if you email. So I hope to talk to you guys. Talk to you guys soon. Talk to you next time. Season's in full swings. We got plenty
some pictures
to talk about.
Before you get off the golf course today, you could have some moments that will change the course of your life.